What is going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 48 of the MM Arcade Podcast. It is a big week for us here in Australia when it comes to the UFC. I'm excited, bro. I'm very pumped. Are you?
I am. You know, I was more excited when I could have gone.
Yeah, it's like, true.
I'm sure you're feeling the energy now. Just wait till you get there. I'm sure it'll, you know, take over a bit. But you know what? I'm still excited. Such a banger card for Australian fans and Australian athletes on the weekend. It's what do you know what time it is? Because I know it's in Perth. Is Perth 3 hours behind or ahead of us?
So in terms of the actual card, it starts at like 5:30 a.m., 6 a.m. Perth time.
Okay. And what's that here?
And in Sydney, I think that's 2 hours. So technically, it's like 7 a.m. ish, 7:30 a.m. ish in Sydney. So yeah, not so bad. Not so bad.
You know what?
It's not as bad as the Manchester card for the UK fans.
So hold on, is that the main card start you said?
No, I think that. Oh, you know what? I'm just going to look it up because I'm probably going to get it wrong. Okay, so, the times are all weird, man. Okay, so apparently the main card. This isn't right. So the main card, 12 p.m. Sydney time. So that's for you, right? Okay. But for me and everyone else in Perth, it'll be 10 a.m. I think.
Yep.
Perth time.
I remember when I watched Volk fight that time over there. It was something along those lines.
I'm excited, man. I've like prepped everything. All the equipment is ready to go, and like I kind of know what my schedule is now as well. So I'm pretty excited. By the way, I did post in the community tab. If any of you have any questions that you'd like me to ask the fighters, you know, whether it's at the press conferences or potentially, fingers crossed, any interviews I can do, let us know in the comments below, and I'll try and ask as many of them as possible. And good questions. I'm not going to ask, how is it like to fight in Australia? Those questions are going to be probably asked by someone else anyway. So let us know what you think of the comments below.
You just got to keep it classy, Johnny. You got to keep it classy.
I'm going to keep it. Dude, look at me. I think I am a professional.
Just keep it classy.
I'm not going to be an idiot. I've seen some of those like TikTokers and whatnot. They'll ask questions at UFC press conferences, or especially the influence of boxing events. It just goes crazy, man.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. It takes, I don't know, I hate it. I hate it not only for the sport, but I hate it for the athletes.
Yeah.
Like I've been victim to those questions before. You know what? Like nowadays, I don't mind because like I've gotten to a point where I can handle them quite well. And, you know, I find them funny, if anything. You know, I can turn it around and make it funnier.
Yeah.
It can become a joke between us. But I feel for, like, the newer guys that aren't quite as experienced on the microphone or in interviews, and they kind of get stumped and then they get put into a funny position and then answer a silly way that they generally wouldn't say if they had been given the time to think about it. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
And a big part of the issue is that everything is now, you know, clippable in a 10-second to up to 60-second clip. Everything's going on TikTok or Instagram. So one small thing that you say, more so than ever, is probably going to be taken out of context. You do have to be careful. But I'm going to ask very fair, very good questions, hopefully, if I get the opportunity to, because I still don't know, like, if I'm going to be able to get as many opportunities, you know, with interviews and whatnot. But I am very excited. I can't wait. This is going to be my first UFC card as well. So I'm stoked.
I'm sure you'll do us proud, and it's a mad card to pop your cherry.
And speaking of, let's talk about it. So UFC 305, we're going to be doing our breakdown / predictions today. Let's start off with the main event for the middleweight title, Dricus du Plessis against Israel Adesanya. Of course, Dricus with the title, 21 wins, 2 losses, recently coming off a, let's call it a close, controversial win against Strickland to win the title or to obtain the title. Israel Adesanya coming off a bit of a, I don't know what you would call it. How long has he not fought for? 11 months or so? It's not been crazy long.
Very hard to say. But I did remember him saying that he wouldn't be back till like 2028.
I remember that. I think he was joking when he said that. But 100%. He hasn't fought in a little bit since the loss of Sean Strickland when he lost the title. Obviously, before that, he beat Alex Pereira to win the title. Prior to that, he lost to Pereira. So he's had a couple of losses in his recent fights now, but he is coming back. Rob, you are by far the expert in the room when it comes to talking about both of these fighters, probably most in the world next to someone like Sean Strickland. So I'll let you take this one. break down this fight for us and give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with, it's very hard to put a hard pick on either one of them. And I mentioned last week, I don't want to do that anymore.
Fair enough.
Although for Unibet, I still give picks. So if you want a hard pick, go to Unibet. You can find them there. Fair. But I'll say, all we can look at is historically, like their previous fights. Drickus, his last fight against Strickland, right? He moved forward. He put pressure on Strickland. Didn't let Strickland do that to him. Shut his game down. Was very aggressive. Crowded that space. Didn't let Strickland really find the rhythm that he likes to fight in.
Yeah.
And come away with the decision win. Okay? Strickland, prior to that fight, fought Adesanya. Did exactly that to Israel. Pushed into his space. Didn't allow Adesanya to utilize that dangerous space that he likes fighting in. He crowded him to a point where he didn't let him have any free distancing from the fence so that he could move away and be evasive, because he loves fighting like that. He's very tall. He fights very tall, and he likes countering like that. He slips back. He leans back. A lot of weight on that rear leg to get away from the punch and the strikes. Moves out, circles out. Strickland closed that gap, crowded that space, kept Adesanya's back to the fence for 90% of the fight, and beat Adesanya by decision win. Okay? So, this fight, Drickus versus Israel, we have to look at it and think Drickus was able to do that. Obviously, styles make fights, but Drickus was able to push that plan against Strickland, that Strickland was able to push against Adesanya. So you would have to think Drickus is going to push that same plan, that same motive on Adesanya. And I guess the million-dollar question is, what has Izzy done in his layoff since the Strickland fight to make sure that doesn't happen again? Because you can bet your bottom dollar Drickus is going to push into that.
I am torn in a number of regards, because I distinctly remember that Sean Strickland Israel fight, and you can't deny that Sean Strickland was on point that whole fight, the entire night, right? But I do want to say that Izzy did look a little bit off, and I think part of the reason is how active he was as a champion. He fought a lot. He was training a lot, in and out of fight camps. We often don't see that active of a champion nowadays, at least anyway. So it felt like he was just exhausted, especially after those fights with Alex Pereira. I want to say in part that that's what contributed to it. So now that he's recovered, seemingly, he looks good, you know, not fighting for, let's say it was almost a year. Do you think that's going to have a big factor when it comes to this fight? Because I want to say that that was at least partly what contributed to him losing to Sean Strickland. Not taking away from Strickland's win, but Izzy just didn't look like himself, maybe because of those factors.
Yeah, definitely. And credit to him, he was very active, you know, and those Pereira fights, the hype around them, the legacy behind them, the amount of everything that went into those two fights was massive.
Yeah.
Massive, massive, you know, and I can understand a burnout from that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll say, okay, if we're talking about Izzy's last performance was kind of like a psychological thing, like a mental kind of burnout of exhaustion, then we have to look at it like, so Izzy's pretty good at coming back from that, all right? So he lost the first time against Pereira. I expected that kind of that hold mentally that Pereira had on him in that second fight was nowhere to be seen. Izzy came out with a great win despite that. Okay, so we saw him recover from that very well. Then he has a loss to Strickland, which, you know, if he mentally was burnt out, whatever, that affects you. I've had that sort of fight. Not saying that he had that sort of fight, but I've had that sort of fight, and I understand how it makes you question yourself. It makes you question your ability to rise to the occasion. You know, when your mind and body lets you down. You know, what else can you trust? Like, what can you trust? You lose trust and faith in a lot of different things. So, but I came back from that. Izzy's obviously has a record of coming back from mentally, you know, gripping things. So you would assume he's going to come back better than ever, recharge, refresh. But I'm sure it's going to be there.
I would say that comparison to Izzy's rematch with Alex is a really poignant one. And that win, that knockout, has aged like fine wine, you know, since then, since we've seen what Alex Pereira has done. I want to ask you this. Currently, Israel is the favorite to win. When it comes to at least Australian dollars, this is not US terms, but Australian betting sites have Israel at $1.71 and Dricus at $2.14. Yep. Do you think that's fair, that Israel is the favorite?
Yes, in terms of the punters. Yeah, like you got to look at the track record. You got to look at the history, you know. But like if I had to make a pick, okay, I would say there's a 50% chance. This is my confidence here, okay?
This is you sitting on the fence. Okay,
yeah, I'm sitting on the fence, but I mean it. It's 50, they're 50-50 odds. That's how much I think either one could sway, right? I think there's a 50% chance Izzy kind of keeps him at the end of his jab, utilizes that spacing, doesn't get his back put against the fence, defends some takedown, but ultimately wins by decision. Okay. And I also think there's a 50% chance Dricus does what he did to Strickland, pushes into that space, takes him down, wears him out, turns into a dogfight, doesn't get a finish, but drags it out to the point where he is still the remaining champion.
Yeah.
50-50, my money's on those two results, kind of methods of winning. Can I be wrong? Yeah. Have I been wrong? More often than not. But that's where I sit. If I had to strike a wager,
yeah,
one of those are going to happen, flip a coin.
Yeah. So you don't see this ending in a knockout or a TKO or anything like that, or a submission maybe?
I find it hard. Like, Izzy's very elusive.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got chin. He's elusive. He's hard to hit and he's good at holding on. And Dricus, I haven't really seen Dricus get hurt much. You know, he's a tough dude. He's a very, very tough dude. Got a lot of chin. Hard to put that down.
Do you think people still underestimate, and that this is crazy to say in some people's eyes, I know this because he is the champion, but I still feel like there are people out there that do underestimate Dricus, especially given the controversial nature of the Sean Strickland win, right? A lot of people thought that Sean won that fight, but do you think that people are underestimating him, especially when it comes to the betting odds and a lot of the predictions that other people are giving? Because the dude, yes, he's a bit awkward looking, but he's very powerful. He does have a grappling. He does have a submission game. Do you think people are underestimating him?
Yeah, to a degree. Like, I was victim of that, right? Like, he's an awkward looking dude, man. He fights really awkward. Even when you're in there with him, I thought it was awkward. You know, I felt like he was slow and cumbersome, you know, and then he punched me in the face. So, yeah. So what do you, you know, and you know what, that might be one of his greatest weapons, just to fly under the radar, to make people think he's not up to scuff, and then you get in there with him and he beats you. You know? But that's the end of the good talking points about those two guys. Screw those guys.
Fair.
That's as far as I'm going. I've done enough.
That was impressive. All right. That was like, man, 10 minutes or so. All right. Well, look, if you don't want to give a prediction, I'm personally going to give mine. I do think that this is hard, man. This is, as you said, 50-50. But I think Dricus is a little younger. Not saying that Israel is old, right? But Dricus is a little younger. I feel like he's hungrier. I feel like there's a bit of personal beef between the two. And I think Dricus feels like he has, I don't know, both of them feel like a little bit they have a chip on their shoulder. But I think his awkwardness, even though it's awkward, he uses it to his advantage. He's very powerful. He does have the grappling game that he can utilize. I think he's going to get it done, as you said, probably via submission. I don't see him knocking Izzy out. Unless Izzy can utilize his counter-punching. The way I see Izzy winning is maybe via knockout. So either, I want to say Dricus via decision. And that's what I'm going to stick with. Mm-hmm. Are you sticking on the fence? Are you not going to give a firm prediction either way?
Oh, mate, I don't know. Yeah,
you don't probably have to. I'm not pressuring you.
Probably Drickus by decision. Probably. Okay. Probably. I don't know.
It's really hard. It is really hard. And look, there's. Yeah. I'm not going to say that it's a home ground advantage, but it's Perth. There's a lot of Kiwis there. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of Kiwis showing up in droves to support Israel. You know, though, that didn't happen when he versus Sean in Australia. Dude, everyone was supporting Sean.
And Africa's not far, man.
Yeah.
From Perth.
Yeah. You could have a few of them flying across. You're right.
You'll have a heap. Trust me.
Hey, we have a lot of South Africans.
There's heaps of South Africans in Perth anyway.
Well, in Australia in general, for sure. Yeah. This is a hard one. Let us know what you think in the comments below, but very excited for this fight. Another fight that I'm personally very excited for is Kai Kara-France against Steve Ursek. Flyaway fight. Kara-France, 24 wins, 11 losses. Recently, he's had a couple of losses against Emir Albazi, Brandon Moreno, but before that, he did beat Askar Askarov and Cody Garbrandt. Steve Ursek, 12 wins, 2 losses. He recently did lose against Pantoja, was a very close fight. But before that, he KO'd Matt Schnell, he beat Alessandro Costa. So he did get a very quick title shot, but because of the weirdness of that division at the time, people were injured, and Pantoja's already fought everyone. So he did get a very quick title opportunity. However, I thought he performed very, very well, but he still did lose. What is your take on this fight?
Yeah, mate, it was to the wire, honestly. Like, Steve almost became the next champ after two fights. It was wicked. This fight moving forward, Kai, he's a very, very powerful, effective striker. Very powerful. Like, I find it hard to bet against him in this division, you know, except for when he's fighting Steve. Like, I think Steve... I think he's got the defensive capabilities to nullify Kai's power, but also he's got that peppery, volume type of boxing, crisp boxing that'll give Kai a bit of trouble. And I think Steve is easily as well-rounded as Kai, if not more, especially in the last couple of fights, especially in that last fight, that last showing of Steve. He highlighted just how high his skill level is across the board, wrestling, grappling, striking. So I think, I'm going to back Steve. I think Steve gets it done. I do think he just out-volumes Kai. I think Kai, like, even if Steve gets hit, because Steve took some massive shots from Pantoja and still had the chin to hold those. I think he can get it done. I think he gets it done on his feet. I'm going to go decision. I'm going to go decision win by Steve.
Yeah, I was so bummed for Steve at the end of that Pantoja fight because I think it came down, from memory, correct me if I'm wrong, it was the last round and he decided to try and wrestle and grapple with Pantoja, and I think that's exactly what cost him. Because if he just kept staying on his feet, kept boxing against Pantoja, and he was doing so well with that, I think he could have gone on to win that round. And if he did win that fifth round, he would have won the fight. He would have been the champion. He was so close. And in fact, a lot of people did say that they believe Steve Ursek won. I don't believe that. From memory, because he decided to grapple with him, I think he lost that fight. But he did so phenomenally well. You make a good point. These guys are both very well-rounded. I just don't know after those two losses if Kai Kara-France is going to be able to get one over on Steve Ursek. And I got to support the Aussie. I think he's going to be a champion one day. Genuinely, I do. I think you're right. I am going to go with Steve Ursek as well. I think his boxing is going to be a little bit too much. And I think he gets it done by decision as well. Is this a five-rounder, by the way, or is this a three-rounder?
I'm not too sure. But I have noticed that, like, they're putting a lot of, like, non-main events five rounds nowadays.
I mean, your fight with Hamza, right?
Yeah, dude, don't remind me.
Hey, favors you, if anything.
I've just started the camp, man. It is a nightmare.
Yeah, it says this is the co-main, but I can't find anywhere if this is the bloody, if it's five rounds or not. But would that favor Steve, you think, if it was five rounds?
Hard to say. Those flyaways can go forever.
Yeah, both. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Kai's had experience in that regard as well. I'm going to say yes.
Yeah. I can't find anything. I'm going to assume this is five rounds. I literally cannot have find this confirmed anywhere. Let us know in the comments. But so you're sticking with Steve Ursek?
Yep.
Yeah, same as well. But this is going to be a really good fight. Kiwi against Aussie in Perth. I think it's going to be freaking awesome. Let's see what happens with that. And look, there's a good argument that if either of, like, whoever wins, they're probably pretty close to a title shot, just given the weirdness of that division, even if it is Steve, because it was such a close fight against Pantoja.
I have a feeling that, let's say, like Kai, perhaps, I reckon if Kai wins, he gets a title shot. But I think if Steve wins, they put him up against Moreno.
That's fair.
They won't give him.
Who else do we have?
They won't give him another title fight so close.
That's true. They'll probably put Tatsuro Taira in there before Steve, just because Steve has lost against Pantoja. Who the hell is Pantoja fighting next? Honestly.
I don't know. I remember him mentioning that he just wanted to like see the division punch on a little bit.
That's fair. Why has there been no talk of him moving up in weight and trying to fight someone like Sean O'Malley? Do they not want to see that? Because like, if you look at it just on paper, this is the like perfect time for someone like him to move up and wait and try and become a double champion. Not saying that I want that, but I don't know why there haven't been any talks about it yet. There's talks about every other champion doing
it. It's hard. Yeah, there's too many things to mention. Like, I don't think Sean's a money fighter. Like,
true.
Sean is just a cash cow. So whoever they put against Sean, they want to make the most amount of exposure money they can. Okay,
because
he can fight a lot of people for a lot of cash. Two, I don't know if like they want to move Pantoja into that light yet. You know, I don't. I'm not at the board meetings, but I don't know if they've got the mind map of like what they're doing with him.
Yeah,
and three, I think he's a bad matchup for like he's a great matchup for Sean. Sean's a bad matchup for him. Terrible matchup.
Yeah, and. In terms of money fights, Sean versus Ilya, obviously if they keep their titles, that would probably be the better fight to make as opposed to Sean versus Pantoja.
Especially if Ilya beats Holloway.
Oh, I'm so excited for that fight, dude. I cannot wait.
Like, that's crazy. That fight will mix up so much.
Yeah. That genuinely, and it's hard to compare anything to UFC 300, but I reckon that could be just behind UFC 300 for the best card of the year. But yeah, Steve Ursay, Kaikara France, let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Next, we have a bit of it was a later addition to the card, Mateusz Gamrot against Dan Hooker. Gamrot, 24 wins, 2 losses. This dude has so many, he has barely any losses, so many good wins against some top-ranked fighters. He should be close. I know it's lightweight and there's a bunch of killers in that division, but if there's anyone that should be close to a title opportunity, it should be him, especially if he beats Dan Hooker. So Gamrot, he beat Rafael Dos Anjos. He did beat Fazeev, but he had a knee injury in that fight where I think Fazeev won the first round. But Gamrot was looking to win that second round before that injury. Before that, he did beat Jalen Turner. It was a split decision, lost to Dariush, but also beat Armin Sarukian. Let's not forget about that. Dan Hooker, 23 wins, 12 losses. Recently, he also beat Jalen Turner via split decision. Before that, lost to Arnold Allen. And before that, Islam Makhachev. So, very interesting fight, lightweight fight. Rob, what's your takedown? Breakdown.
I am so happy to see Dan Hooker getting this fight.
Same.
I think this is like one of those risky fights for Gamrot, because I don't think he's got a ton to gain from beating Hooker as he would other people. Because where's Hooker ranked at the moment?
I've got it right here. He's 11.
I think Hooker is a nightmare of a fight for like anybody in the division. Because he's fought guys that can wrestle before and he has pieced them up.
Yeah.
You know, he's so good at timing those knees down the middle and utilizing that space. But I'm also happy for Dan because he's had a bit of a tumultuous few fights, and that last fight wasn't a barn burner to see.
Yeah,
but to see him, because him beating Gamrot puts him straight back in that top five sort of conversation area.
100%.
That's where I want to see him, you know. And just because I'm a bit of a fan, you know, I like the guy. I like the guy. I think it's going to be one of Dan's harder to date tests. Gamrot, man, he's an animal. There's a reason why he's been like running through people the way he has been.
Yeah.
But you know, like third-party intervention.
That's true. Look, Dan Hooker, he has a fantastic takedown defense when it comes to his takedowns. I think it's like 80% defense rate when it comes to takedowns, which is fantastic. So I think he will be snuffing Gamrot's takedowns for a lot of the fight. But this is the thing that worries me. And so everyone knows, Gamrot is actually the heavy favorite to win that. And I think it is fair. The reason why I'm a little worried for Dan is that we just saw it in the Corey Sandhagen and the Umar Nurmagomedov fight, right? Sandhagen did phenomenally well defending the takedown, stuffing them. I don't know how many Umar actually pulled off, but he couldn't, you know, succeed with a lot of them. But I think he was so focused on defending the takedowns, whether it was in the fight camp or in the actual fight, that on the feet, he got pieced up. Like, Umar was the better striker on the night. I'm getting these weird feelings. I'm nervous that this is going to end up in a similar way. Gamrot's going to be spamming the takedowns, and Dan Hooker's going to try and defend as many of them as possible. And I worry that he might not do as well on the feet with his hands. That could be a crazy take, but I'm just getting very, very nervous for Dan, because you know that Gamrot's going to just be spamming takedowns. His pressure is going to be insane. And is that going to tire Dan? Is he going to be able to utilize those knees down the middle, as you said? I don't know, man. I'm really worried for him, being a Dan fan as well.
Of everyone, like whole roster, I reckon one of the sketchiest dudes to shoot on is Hooker.
Yeah, but with your Gamrot, he's a dog, like, dude. He's not going
to
stop.
It just looks dangerous to shoot on him.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's not my game, so.
Fair. If you were to give a prediction, what do you reckon?
You know what? Being the underdog as well, mate, good way to pump up that multi. I'm going to go Hooker. Let's go.
I'm going to have to go with Gamrot. I think Gamrot.
You bloody would.
Look, man, first of all, if Hooker was Aussie, I'd support him, right? But he's Kiwi. That's a step removed.
Nah. I'm Kiwi.
I'm not Kiwi, so I have no strict ties to him, aside from the fact that they're our neighbours. So
you look it.
Do I? Well, it's that, yeah. But I reckon Gamrot is going to take this. I think he's the favourite for a reason, and I think that puts him in a really good position, because I'm looking at the rankings now. There's Poirier above him, and Poirier just lost, right? There's Justin Gaethje, who just lost. There's Charles Oliveira, who just lost. So the only guy above him is Armin Tsarukyan, who he beat. I know that it was a controversial fight from memory, who he beat. He's probably in line to fight Islam Makhachev next after his hand injury. Maybe Gamrot gets the title opportunity. That's all I'm saying. He was the backup fighter at one stage.
Yep.
It's crazy things have happened in the UFC.
I can also see them feeding him to like a Poirier or a Gaethje or...
Probably. Look, he has a lot of wins in that division. Like, that top, probably
that,
he fights.
That top five is so death row. It's mad.
It is. But do you see the logic when you have literally Poirier, Gaethje, and Oliveira all coming off of losses? And after this, where does that put Gamrot in the rankings? Like, he possibly moves up. No, I don't know. But if you beat number 11, does that move you up from 5 to even 4? That's a really hard one to say.
No, it doesn't.
No. Look, at the very least, it's so. Armin against Islam. Sorry?
Mm-hmm.
And then we see what happens after that. But let us know your predictions in the comments below. Next up, here's going to be a fun fight. Tai Tuivasa against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Tuivasa, 14 wins, 7 losses. He knocked out Derek Lewis, but he lost to Garn. He lost to Pavlovich. He did lose to Volkov and Tybura. Those last two losses were submission. I think he was the one that said, thank God I'm not fighting a wrestler now. So I think he's very happy with this fight. Mm-hmm. Jairzinho Rozenstruik, 14 wins, 5 losses. He did beat Shamil Gaziev by TKO, lost to Almeida by submission. He beat Chris Dakow, lost to Volkov, also lost to Curtis Blade. What do you think of this one, Rob?
I think this is an excellent fight for Tai to get back, like to get out of his slump, shake off the dust, and just get back in that winning circle, get back into that top 10, top 5 conversation. Because, it's going to be a fight. I just pray that Tai keeps his composure, doesn't turn it into a brawl, and you know, fights to his capability, because he's an outstanding fighter. Like, I've mentioned it before, like, a couple of years ago, I picked him to be like fighting for the title, you know, being a, because the ceiling for him is huge. Okay. Rosenstruck's a heavy striker. He's got heavy hands.
Yeah.
If Ty keeps it clean, utilizes his kicks and doesn't turn it into a brawl, doesn't give Rosenstruck the opening and the hole that he wants.
Yeah.
I think he knocks him out. I think he TKOs Rosenstruck within two.
I am also leaning towards Ty. Even though Ty is not the favorite, he's the underdog heading into this. No, I think
another great tip.
Yeah, look, I think Ty has slightly more knockout power than Rosenstruck. Rosenstruck's a little bit more technical. I think Ty can get it done. I'm going to say this fight ends in the first round, personally, and I think either guy is getting knocked out. I'm just leaning more towards Ty because, again, like he's going to have the fans behind him. Everyone's going to be supporting him. I think he knows how important this fight is. I'm going to go with Ty to knock Rosenstruck out. I think that's also a fair one.
Within two.
Within two? All right. And I think that's it. There was another fight on the main card. I think it was Jing Liang against Carlos Prates. I'm not too familiar with Carlos Prates. I've watched the last couple of his fights, but Li Jingliang, good to see him back. He hasn't fought in a little bit. Do you have a quick prediction for this one? He hasn't fought since 2022. That's crazy. And he lost against Daniel Rodriguez, D-Rod.
I have to wait and see. Yeah. I have to wait and see.
But that is UFC 305. As always, we'd love to hear your predictions, your thoughts in the comments below. Next up, we've got some game news. And again, by far the biggest topic of the week was the new Borderlands movie. Rob, have you ever played the Borderlands games out of curiosity?
I did play Borderlands 3, maybe.
Yeah, probably not the best one for you to pick up. It was good. Yeah. Just wasn't as good as the previous.
It was all right. I don't love the slapstick comedy a bit.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of takes away the seriousness and immersion for me.
But it was like growing up, I think I played Borderlands 1 and 2 when I was a teenager. So at that time, didn't seem as cringe. And I just enjoyed playing this, you know, looter shooter with friends. But then as you get a little bit older, yeah, the comedy does wear on you a little bit. And that's kind of related to this new movie that has come out. So there's a Borderlands movie and terrible reviews, 10% rating on Rotten Tomatoes for the critic, 51% audience. It feels like they completely bombed with this. I don't know, man. It's the biggest news and it crushes me because I love Borderlands so much. I still haven't watched the movie, but it's like they just completely messed it up. The casting, I've said this for a while, was wrong for the most part. It wasn't even an R18 film. It wasn't a retelling of the games. I didn't really say too faithful to the games from what I hear. I'm just sad about it. We should watch it, Rob.
No way. Like I haven't watched movies in ages, but I'm not gonna
start with Borderlands.
You know, and like I don't think I love the story in Borderlands 3 anyway. Like I just liked leveling up my character and getting stronger. So I don't know.
How do you feel about video game adaptations in general?
Not for it. I find that it is so hard. Just like the Witcher show.
Oh, that's another rough one.
Like, I just feel like you cannot portray a game with a story of that caliber in, fair, like, with real life humans. You know,
I will say, though, Fallout TV show, phenomenal. Like, genuinely, I've told you this and you haven't watched it. I bet you haven't.
Not yet.
And the Super Mario animated movie was also pretty fun as well.
That was so good.
Yeah,
so
there you go. All right.
That was a great one.
Yeah.
That was a great one.
It was like that. Obviously, there's been all this history of video game adaptations typically being bad. Sorry?
It was animated, though.
It was animated. And that does make a difference. But before that, like, there's always been a bit of a bad reputation with video game adaptations. And then I felt like we were on a good run. We had Super Mario. I thought the new Mortal Kombat was pretty fun.
You know what? The Last of Us, the TV show, was
Last of Us was good. I know a lot of people didn't like that, but I thought it was really great. But then, like, I don't know, this Borderlands movie felt like it's just taking everything back down again.
Mate. You win some, you lose some.
yeah, they could have done a better job. Mate, I don't know.
There are bomb movies all the time.
Yeah, that's true. There are. Do you know what I just watched? Oh, we'll talk about it in the next section. What we're watching, playing, and reading. Have you been up to much in this past week?
Tell me. You can't just segue into it.
All right. Perfect segue.
Tell me.
Have you watched Oppenheimer yet?
No.
It's like genuinely fantastic.
What is it?
So Oppenheimer is about Oppenheimer, famous scientist. He was the one that was involved developing the H-bomb that landed on Japan. It was a fascinating movie. Like, I thought the actors that they picked were top class. The way that they told the story was fascinating. I'm generally like a huge fan of science and especially astronomy and those aspects of that, like how stars die and everything. But the way they told that story and the aftermath of it, especially with like him trying to campaign against arms control and everything, it was great. It's hard to say. I don't want to spoil it because it is pretty much history. I know they take some liberties with the story, but you should watch it. It's phenomenal, man.
Yep. I'll put it in the list.
All right. And you know what I started recently?
What?
Dragon Age Inquisition. I've started that. Yeah.
How you
not Origins. I know that's you said to go back to the original, but here's the funny thing, right? So I started Inquisition because it's on my PS5. I can play it on the TV. It was just easier. I tried to muck around with NVIDIA GeForce Now to see if I could stream it, but Origins isn't there. Inquisition's only there. So I just played Inquisitions. And even that game, I know it's a little bit older now, even Inquisition feels a little dated. It feels a little rough around the edges, but I'm trying to like put my 10-year had to go on, you know what I mean? Like, just trying to think that this is a bit of an older game and enjoy it for what it is. So even though the controls are a little bit funny, the frame rate is a little bit low at times, I've only put like 10 hours into it so far, but I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Dragon's Dogma 2, you know, being in a party and going around and fighting enemies.
A little bit. I just feel like the story is what drives it. But Inquisition ended up pissing me off. Like, there's too many fetch quests.
There are a lot. It
burnt me out. Because I can't not do a quest. But
yes,
doing
you can.
Them was and like just doing them was such a time sink. And that's why they put in there. They just wanted you to waste time. And it really upset me.
There are a lot. Like, I noticed that straight away as soon as you go to the hinterlands, it's like get this many camps and close this many rifts and all of them.
It burnt me out. That's why I've never finished it.
Oh, you never finished it?
No. But
are you planning on finishing it before Veilguard? Are you going to play Veilguard? Is it called Veilguard?
I don't know. That game burnt me out so hard that I'm thinking about just closing the door. You know, just closing the page.
No more Dragon Age.
Maybe. That's how much those quests burnt me out. Like,
you just didn't have to do them. Just play the main story.
Yeah, but some of them were like, if you didn't do them, affected map-related quests, and it annoyed me because little things like that affect the story. And the stories was the biggest driving force behind the entire series, for me anyway.
So you loved Origins. Did you like 2 as much as well?
I did. Yeah. It was very different to Origins, and it didn't get a lot of love. Didn't get like the same feedback, but I liked it. I didn't like the classes as much or the combat as much, but it was cool. It was cool. Not as good as Origins, but good.
Would you see, now it's going to be hard for you to just like, if Veilguard came out and it's really good, to try and give that a go. I don't know. I say that and I haven't played Origins. I haven't played 2. So I thought jumping into Inquisition was fine. Like, I just watched this awesome YouTube video that gave me a bit of a layout as to the lore and all that. So I understand everything a bit more now.
Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of history with what happened in 2 and with Origins. But
and the characters, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Is it really that crazy?
Mate, it is. Probably one of the better stories across games that I've played because
that's crazy.
You have such lasting impacts. Like what you did in Origins, like repercussions pop up in Inquisitions.
Mm.
It's like there's characters that pop up. It is wild.
How do they, like, because I'm technically playing the default world state. Like, so when I play Veilguard, I assume that I can either pick the default world state or drag across everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is that meant to be like the what's considered canon, the default lore state?
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think because it's a game, canon's what you make it, right?
True. It's canon to you. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. That's what I watched. What about you, man?
That's cool. Yeah, you enjoying it.
I am. As I said, I have to get over the fact that it's a bit older now and the mechanics are a little bit dated. It's a bit rough around the edges, but I can see past that. I'm not going to be one of those guys that's like, I can't play this. So if you push through that initial barrier, I think there's a lot of fun to be had. But as I said, I've only put in 10 hours. I just want to make sure that I finish it before the Veilguard.
Yep. When does that come out?
The Veilguard. I don't know if there's a date, actually. Maybe September? I don't think there's a date yet. It just says 2024. You should give it a go, though, man. Nah, you should give Dragon Age a chance.
We'll see.
What have you been playing?
You know, another thing, like, I hate having to install their browser. Piss me off as well. What browser did they use for that game? For
EA Games? Play or whatever?
Yeah, whatever that was. That pissed me off as well. I'm just like a grouchy old man here.
You are being a grouchy old man. What's going on?
What have I been doing? I've been playing Magic: The Gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, you just sit there, get in the game, in and out within 5-10 minutes. It's like,
fair.
And it's fun. It's fun. Like, I'm just so tempted to start sinking cash into it, dude. Like, so tempted. Because, like, I look up decks online because I just like looking them up, and then I see a deck that I like, and I see a cool synergy between cards or a cool combo with this deck, and it's just so cool that I want to try them out. But to try them out, it's like $150 every time. So
for a deck,
yeah, because you need the blister packs, and you get wild cards which help you craft the deck out of that. I'm sure there's a smarter way of doing it, but.
That's so much, and that's not even the physical version. That's that you're playing the game.
Exactly, but
that's insane, bro.
Yeah, but
what?
I don't know.
Are you gonna do it?
It's fine. It's Magic. It's always been like that. Like, it's an expensive game.
Fair enough.
And it's funny if you go into. I use it on Steam now. Like, just the comments are just like, can't do it free. Got to spend money. Got to do this. Got to do that. Like, people are whinging about it. It's like, dude, it's always been like that. It is such a sink. Such a sink.
Far out, dude.
Like, if you want to play, like, if you want to get super competitive, because you can make decks that are just kind of like on with what you get, but it's a grind. It is a grind.
That's right? Scary, man. That's like, that's potential to spend a lot of money that you probably shouldn't.
Yeah, I've probably spent... I don't know. I had a real burst period back in 2020, maybe.
Yeah.
And then I had a big layoff. And then I've recently just gone, probably spent maybe $2,000 in it, maybe $2,500. Maybe.
Dude, that is insane. What are you talking about? $2,000?
Yeah, maybe $2,000. Maybe two.
What?
Grand. $2,500 is too much. Probably $2,000.
Well, that's Aussie though. For US listeners, that's $2,000 Aussie. So do the conversion.
Yeah.
Still over $1,000 US. That's insane, dude.
Yeah, so that's been fun.
Jesus.
Thinking about getting back into Enshrouded. They've gotten a lot of updates lately.
That was
a lot of fun as well. That's a fun game if you haven't played it, in like survival games with good character building and stuff. And base building, probably one of the better base building games I've played. It's so nice to look at and you can just get away with making things so cool.
Yeah.
Have I been playing anything else? I jumped back into the Rift with my buddies the other day.
Yeah.
So I've been playing League of Legends a little bit. I am so bad. Like, I feel like I've aged 47 years because when fights happen, my delay, I'm so delayed and my response time is just not there. When there's too many flashing things going on the screen, I just freeze up, dude. I do nothing. I just die. Like, yeah, but it's fun. It's fun. Well, sort of.
Is it fun, really?
Sort of. Like, it's fun to play with my friend, but the games where I'm 0-10, like, I'm just sitting there quiet for a good 30 minutes getting through the game, just trying my best. But, yeah, that's about it. I watching the latest season of anime, still I don't see anything here that's like too crazy. Oh, Wistoria, Wand and Sword, that's pretty cool. It's not nothing groundbreaking, but it's pretty cool. Otherwise, That's it, mate. That's it.
All right. All right. All right. I got to ask you a question, by the way, because a few of the comments have been about this. Mm-hmm. When are you going to play Shadow of the Erdtree? Mm-hmm. Are you ever going to play it?
Yeah, dude, because I'm really pumped on my next character. I'm going to make a Bobarian.
But are you going to like blitz, like, you know, Radahn and Moog and go straight to the DLC, or are you going to do the whole game first and then the DLC?
I'll do the game up until I can get to Radahn without failing any quests.
All right.
So, like, I'll go through the storyline properly up until you speak to old boy at the church.
Yeah.
And then I'll run through his quest line to get to the Red Palace or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And then I'll go from there. I don't know if I'll do the whole DLC first or not. You know, I want to make a barbarian though. So, and a lot of my weapons come pre that. I'm going to go golem bow, 90 strength. Oh, you know, and you know what? This time round, I'm going to play the game. So I'm not going to do any grinding at all. I'm only going to spend souls along the way and just keep myself low level, see what happens.
So no Palace Ledge Road grinding.
Nothing. Because I've got heaps of characters that are like super leveled. Like I'm just going to just a man in his bow. That's it. That's all.
I'm so torn by how easy it is to grind in Elden Ring, because the game's clearly designed like that. Like, you go Palace Edge Road, every time you go to the site, it respawns the characters and they give you X amount of runes. They know that's how the game works. They developed it to be like that, and they never patched it out. It's just so easy to get runes. It's so easy to level up. Like, see, is it intentional? Is it okay for me to do it? I don't know.
Yeah, they allow. It's a tool they've given you. I liked the system they had in Dark Souls 2. It's like, so after about 10 times if you kill the same enemy 10 times, it stops respawning. It was really cool. And the only way to get it to respawn was joining a covenant that made the enemies much harder.
Wow.
So, it was a really cool system. Dark Souls 2 had a lot of cool systems.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you're going into New Game Plus constantly, I guess it does make sense that you're able to keep leveling and leveling and leveling. But I know, what is it? When you hit New Game Plus 7, what's the cap where it just gets, you know, it doesn't get any harder, but it's just ridiculous. Like, enemies are one-shotting you. I think it's seven.
Yeah, but
have you tried it? Have you tried NG Plus 7?
I don't like playing New Game Plus, period.
Fair enough.
I don't go into New Game Plus ever.
Fair. But I think a lot of people tried the DLC on New Game Plus and they got wrecked.
There's been a lot of patches. Apparently they nerfed it pretty hard.
New Game Plus or the DLC?
Yeah. No, the DLC.
So the patches that they did, it's more about... They're not called Skadju Tree. Apparently they're called Shadju Tree. But the fragments that you get that let you power up, apparently they made it so that the initial ones that you get power you up a little bit quicker, and they did some things to make it obvious that you need to collect these things. But towards the end game, I think it's the same scaling as it was at launch.
I think they also changed it so it's like, instead of like you get stronger with how many you have, it's like you get stronger with the less you have. Like, having more is still better, but not by as much as it used to be. Does that make sense?
Right. So okay.
They made having a lower number more impactful than
that makes
later
sense.
On.
I was surprised, because even with golden seeds in the main game, you didn't need to get all of them to max out. Whereas with the Shadow Tree fragments, like, you had to get all of them. Like, there was only a set amount to get to the max level, and you had to get all 50 or whatever the number was. I was surprised that they did that, because they're pretty much saying, we are making you go to every part of the map if you want the last battle especially to not be so hard. Because when I got to the last battle, I think I'd leveled up 9 times, which was not even close to the max. And that's why I got my ass handed to me so many times.
Happens.
It's a hard battle. It's a hard fight. But I look forward to seeing what you thought about it in about 3 months' time when you finally get to it. And finally, we've got viewer questions. As always, let us know your thoughts in the comments below when it comes to the viewer questions. But first one comes from @YouTubeWarrior. Can I get your opinions on the Olympics, and what sport in the Olympics do you think is the worst? And finally, what sport would you want to be added to the Olympics? Rob?
I would like either jiu-jitsu, MMA, or kickboxing added to the Olympics.
Okay.
Like, I think I find it hard to believe that those aren't in already.
Well, can I ask you about MMA? How would it work? One cut, you're gone. You can't fight for the rest of the tournament. And how many times are you fighting in a period of a week? It just seems dangerous to me.
But yeah. For cowards, maybe. It's great.
I mean, no, hold on. Yeah. UFC, you're fighting 2-3 times a year. It's different.
No, I don't know. Maybe not MMA, but jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, maybe.
Jiu-jitsu, yeah.
Same thing. Kickboxing, even the same thing. I don't know. Maybe it's kind of like the boxing. They have to wear headgear, you know?
Headgear, maybe some modified rules.
I don't know. Yeah. But I'd like to see some more forms of combat sports, because combat sports has evolved since, you know, then. And in terms of like what's the worst sport, it's like that I am not stepping into that trap. Like, that is a quick way to make heaps of people hate you.
I'm happy to say it, and I can say this as...
No, dude, don't do it. Don't
look,
do it,
I think everyone's going to agree with me. I think everyone will agree with me. I was a huge break dancer. I love my hip hop. I love dancing. I used to do it growing up, going through high school. And I think breakdancing is a phenomenal art form. And I watch it to this day. I love breakdancing movies and everything. I don't believe it's an Olympic sport. That's my personal opinion. And I'm not even talking about the Australian that was breakdancing. I'm just talking about in general. I find it hard to put them in the same category. This is apples and oranges, in my opinion. I find it hard to put it in the same category as someone that's sprinting 100 meters in over 9.5 seconds or whatever. I don't think they're comparable. I find it hard to compare it to people that are in their boxing or whatever. So that would be my personal view as someone that loves breakdancing.
Have you seen all the Olympic sports? Like, you think breakdancing has more has less validity than skateboarding?
No, I think skateboarding's great. Skateboarding is phenomenal, man. I love watching skateboarding in the Olympics. Name another one. Shooting is incredibly difficult. Like, they're shooting
bouldering?
Bouldering's up there. All right. That's up there. Maybe. Yeah. But what else? Like,
equestrian?
I'm not a fan of equestrian, but I see the arguments.
Heaps of arguments. This is what I mean. This is how I feel about the Olympics in general. I think the Olympics should be just a competition of what the human body can achieve. I don't think there should be any use of instruments or tools or anything like that. Like, they should just lift heavy things, run really fast, and fight.
Oh, hold on. So what about javelin?
But I'm a caveman, so I don't like – I've been loving the Olympics. I love watching the random sports as well. I think it's cool. Yeah. And I appreciate the level at what, you know, that they get to.
All right. Well, look, I gave my answer.
And that the Australian chick, everyone should lay off her. She went out there, just did her best.
Yeah, right. I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole.
Have a go.
Next question is from at Jimbo Jones 2423. My wife has recently gotten her blue belt in karate and has to practice a lot of katas. Do you still remember any of your katas from your early karate days?
Rob? I do. Yeah. Like, there is, like, obviously I remember the earliest of katas. The harder ones were, they're getting a bit complicated, and I didn't practice them anywhere near as much as, say, cypher. Like, yeah. I did that too many times. I don't think I could ever forget that.
I always said that learning kata is like learning how to ride a bike. Once you learn it and you build it in, because it's all muscle memory, you don't forget it. So Gekisadai, Ich, Ni, Cypher, Sizonshin, and there's one other that I remember a lot. Beyond that, like Sensoru and all that, that's lost to time. But yeah, those are the ones that I remember. Next question is from at Stoic9701. Question for you both. What's your favorite nostalgic gaming experience? Mine would be Saturday mornings when I was a kid playing Crash Bandicoot on the PlayStation 1. Great game. Rob?
Hard to say. But like, I can't beat when I hear the music from Final Fantasy X. Like, it is, or Final Fantasy VIII, because I spent so much time on those games that they hit different.
I would say for me, it was probably, so myself, my brother and my cousin, we would play Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. I would just sit and watch them, man. Those are the best times that I had. Freaking loved it. Like, my brother would always be controlling. My cousin was really smart, still is very smart. He could figure out all the puzzles. And I would just sit and watch, man. So not even me playing. Those are my fondest gaming experiences. It was awesome. Next question is from at Elbaso12345. Hey, Rob. For years, I've heard you talk about not wanting to fight during Christmas because you want to spend it with your family and enjoy food. So my question is, as a Puerto Rican living in Houston, Texas, what do Australians eat as a Christmas dinner or lunch or whatever meal y'all eat during Christmas?
Well, like, it's usually just like Christmas ham.
Yep.
And like, it depends. Like,
do you do prawns?
Yeah, always so many prawns.
There you go.
I don't even like prawns that much. Like,
is prawns a Christmas just an Aussie thing, or is it done around the world?
Maybe too many prawns, but too many. But there's always like, it depends. Like, Australia's very multicultural, so like every family has a different dish. Like a different sort of Christmas dinner. But usually there's always prawns and Christmas ham involved, right?
And prawns, you have to make sure you go to the good seafood restaurant the day before. You get fresh prawns.
Mate.
And we don't cook them. It's just like you peel them. Like, they're cooked, but like not on a frying pan or anything.
You got to put in a ticket, dude, because they can't get prawns in the day before.
That's true. But that's when you pick them up, right? Like, I've never been the one that purchased the prawns. They're always there for me. But I know it's always a crazy day the day before to get all the prawns. And next question, final question, is from at cookoutfan7399. Question for Rob and Johnny. What are some of your favorite fighters to watch, like fighters that you find aesthetically pleasing or just cathartic to watch? Why are you laughing?
No, because no reason.
Well, go on. What's your answer? Aesthetically pleasing.
I don't have one, dude.
You don't have a favorite fighter?
Like a favorite fighter? Like favorite fighter?
Sure. Yeah, let's go with that. But if they're your favorite, you probably like the way they fight and the way they look. You know what I mean?
Not necessarily.
I don't think they're talking about like how they look, just like, you know, their style, the way they move. Like, people love MVP because he's fun and exciting, you know?
Well, I like watching Gaethje fight. I don't find him aesthetically pleasing, but...
That's not what they're referring to.
Dude. Well,
that's the way that they fight.
That's how I'm interpreting it. And I'm just avoiding that,
not saying,
whatever that mess is.
Do you think they look hot? That's not what they're asking. It's how they look. I'm trying to explain this.
Cookout a fan? Nah, I'm not answering it. Get out of here.
All right. So, but favorite fighter. Let's go with that then.
My favorite fighter. I don't really have one.
To watch.
Like, obviously, my teammates, you know, I like them a lot more than most people. Like, I really like watching Thai fight.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Fair enough. Well, look, if I was to give an answer, obviously, you're included. But I will say, bro, when I watch you fight, I get nervous. I'm like, I'm sitting on the edge of the seat. Because I don't want you to lose. I'm just like, win. So it's more nerve-wracking to me than anything. But next to you, like, I always love watching Anderson Silva fight. He was always really bloody exciting. GSP is up there for me as well. Nowadays, probably Tommy Aspinall. Every time that dude fights, I love it. Because you know someone's getting knocked out. It's the best.
That's pretty cool. It is.
Yeah. But those are all the questions, and that was episode 48 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Thank you for watching or listening. By the way, big shout out to all our Spotify listeners. I think we have a couple of thousand followers on Spotify, man.
How good is
cool.
Is that?
Yeah. I forget to tell you all the time, but the
cult is growing. We still need to we need to pump our subscriptions. You need to start doing the show topless, mate.
You need to start promoting it on your socials. I don't have a million followers on Instagram.
Subs.
Promote on Instagram. Do a story about the podcast.
Yeah, I need to. I will this week. This week. Right. Stay tuned.
All right. Well, let us know. Do you have any final thoughts before we head into Perth, UFC 305?
Yeah, mate. Do us proud, Johnny. Get out there. Have some fun. Enjoy it and do us proud. You know, we'll be watching.
Yeah, I'm excited. And if anyone is there and you do happen to see me, give me a shout. Take some photos if you want. I don't know. I've never done anything like this before, but I'm excited, man. I'm excited to watch, like, be at my first UFC event, but also be there on the media side with press credentials. I think it's going to be awesome. No, I shouldn't say this now. I'll talk about it after the event because I think it'll be really cool. I got cool news to share about it, but it'll be fun. But you can close out the podcast as always, man.
Yeah, thank you very much to all our listeners and subscribers. Tell your friends. Let's get those numbers up. And thank you very much, guys.